Hey folks, it's Brian Cook, your host here with a few words from our sponsor, Caught Up In You by Jules Bennett. The Monroe brothers have their differences, but one project unites them, turning an antebellum mansion in their Haven, Georgia hometown into a peaceful spa. It was the dream of their late sister, and it's about to set off a major renovation in the life of middle brother Braxton in Caught Up In You by Jules Bennett. The spa needs to hire a massage therapist, which is how Braxton finds himself face down in his boxers as the candidates audition their skills. He just wasn't expecting to become instantly smitten with the one who comes to the interview accompanied by her seeing-eye dog, Heidi. Caught Up In You by best-selling author Jules Bennett brings readers an emotional small-town romance with a brave heroine and big-hearted hero. Available now everywhere books are sold. More info about Caught Up In You is at www.kensingtonbooks.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 172 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include December 18th, 2016 at the Virgil in Los Angeles. That is a championship edition. December 27th at Union Hall in Brooklyn. December 28th at Great Scott in Boston. And January 27th at San Francisco Sketchfest. Today's show was recorded back December 28th of last year, 2015, at Union Hall in Brooklyn. This is round one featuring Lisa Curry, Lillian Devane, Julia Rossi, and Shane Torres reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy.
First round one competitor who has brought a prepared piece, Lillian Devane, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, keep it going for Brian. All right. How's it going, guys? Cool. Let's talk about fucking and stuff. All right. It was a hot summer. The streets were quiet, save a few meandering schoolboys armed with fishing rods and droopy hounds. The local market seemed to be the only source of excitement this day, with its bountiful summer peaches, soft and juicy, beckoning. Well, I'll be, for the life of me, I just can't choose between these lovely peaches or those heavenly strawberries. Aunt B was a sturdy woman, built of pioneer fortitude, homespun wisdom, and years of barely concealed racism. I suppose I had to take both. After all, Andy loves peach cobbler, but Opie prefers strawberry shortcake. Her hands traced the fullness of the soft peach. A distant memory had crystallized and broken, much like the delicious penny candy at Milton's Malt Shop. This was Aunt Bee's frustrated world, an unending search for what pleased others, never regarding her own desires, never acknowledging the rivers of lust that were lazily flowing beneath that cold cream-slathered skin. It had already been a long day for Sheriff Andy Taylor. The biscuits at Shelby's Diner had been raw and flavorless, and his deputy Barney had beaten a man to death for not helping a woman cross the street. Mayberry was changing. On top of that, his 8-year-old son Opie just walked into the police station, a look of guilt spread across his freckled face. Pa? Yes, son. Opie's eyes filled with tears. Remember when I got that slingshot and accidentally killed that mama bird? Sure do, son. And remember when I set that bobcat on fire, but I couldn't watch it burn? That was a hard lesson for you, my boy. Opie shifted his weight. Well, Pa, I shot a dog in the face, and I just feel awful about it. The blood's all over Aunt Bee's blackberry bushes, and she'll be mighty sore with me. Andy frowned. It was hard being a single parent, even harder when your child had access to various weapons and no supervision. I reckon we might put you in a cell for a few hours so you can see how it feels to be a criminal, Opie. Do you think that's fair? Opie nodded, miserable. Andy led Opie into Otis the Drunk's usual cell and handed him a pencil and paper to write the letter to the old man who is now without his loyal hunting dog. Andy was just about finished for the day when the door flew open and his deputy, Barney Fife, scrambled in the door. Andy, you gotta see this. There's a car in town with different colored door on it. Let's investigate. Andy rubbed his temples. Barney, not now. We'll take care of that tomorrow. Andy was fed up with his partner, whose bumbling antics made a fool out of law enforcement time and time again. Tomorrow might be gone. It's a level 24 traffic offense, a danger to public safety. Besides, when's the last time we had an adventure, just you and me? Barney's voice quivered. He longed for an afternoon in the cruiser with the sheriff, hours for them to be alone, two men united in their passion for justice. With that, the door opened again, and in stumbled Gomer Pyle, the mechanic, and Floyd the barber, with Otis slung between them, dead drunk. "What in tarnation is going on?" screeched Barney, gently pressing his chicken-boned fingers on a single bullet, forever button in his top pocket. Gomer looked up from under his tiny, weird cap. "Otis is the drunkest I ever done seen him. He was getting a haircut at Floyd's, and then he was getting them shakes, so I poured a little down his throat, but it didn't help none, so I just kept a-pouring, and now look at him." Andy sighed. "All right, boys, you know the routine. Let's get him in there. Opie, here's a new lesson for you, son." Otis pooled on the floor beside a wide-eyed Opie, but Andy held the cell door open. "You know what, boys? There's room enough for all of you. Gomer, Floyd, you're under arrest for general tomfoolery and aiding and abetting a town drunk. Also, Floyd, you really ought to get that one eye checked out, seeing as you're a barber and all, it ain't safe." The men got to... You guys watch Nick and Knight? Okay. The men got into the cell, helpless against the corrupt and powerful hand of Mayberry law enforcement. Andy spun around. "And you, Barney, you're the worst of them all," he snarled, years of frustration finally rising. "Well, what do you mean, Andy? I'm your loyal partner. I uphold the law at every turn." Andy grabbed the collar of Barney's uniform, held him close and nearly off the floor. He was a man on the edge. "Day in and day out, you make a laughingstock of this department with your petty fines and your bungled investigations, and I'm sick and tired of it." Andy finally, he felt so odd being close to his partner. In all these years, they'd never so much as brushed hands. He felt warm. Despite his fear, Barney grinned. It was his dream to inspire such emotion in the broad and capable Andy, his leader, his hero. Seizing Andy's confused paws, Barney encircled Andy's tawny neck, reddened by long afternoons by the fishing hole. Reeling with passion, he placed his slick, pillowy lips upon Andy's, searching and frisking for the feelings he'd long known were inside him. Andy jumped back. "Barney, what in the..." But Barney didn't let him finish. Somehow, somewhere, he possessed the strength to push Andy against his desk, paper scattered, wide eyes watched from nearby cages. Weaponless, Barney was skilled with handcuffs and quickly secured Andy's wrists. Frothing with rage, Andy kicked at Barney but missed and fell on his back. Charming southern expletives flowed from his handsome mouth. "Andy, I know you want this too." Barney crouched beside the sheriff, slowly unbuttoning the drab uniform that had sealed their decade-long tension. Sliding his clammy hands down the length of Andy's chest, he went further, underneath the tightly buckled belt, reaching Andy's cock, which was twitching like a worm on a hook. Andy growled, partly in pleasure, partly in anger, like all Southern men in the 1960s. His heaving chest reminded Barney of a rack of perfectly barbecued ribs, one that must be immediately devoured. Saliva streamed through Barney's mouth as he spat on Andy's nipples, slick and glistening like fresh black-eyed peas. He carefully circled them with his fingers, admiring the cut of Andy's jaw, his look of breathless anticipation. "Barney, don't," but it was too late. Seeing Andy's purpled excitement, Barney moved quickly, his own pants growing tighter as he ran his tongue around and around the head of Andy's sex, mimicking the deft movements of Gomer's trusty wrench. He took him whole inside his mouth, devouring him further and further, his mind replaying 100 knowing glances, 1,000 chicken pot pies. Andy seized, his body convulsing like a freshly gigged frog, his seed flowing into Barney's mouth like warm apple butter. Satisfied, though far from finished, Barney stood above Andy's limp form, guiding his trousers down and unbuttoning his pocket. "Don't trust me with a gun, do you, Andy?" Barney slid the single bullet from his pocket and slowly worked it up his ass, carefully edging it back and forth. Eyes closed, he whistled his favorite tune. Until he too shivered in pure crescendoing ecstasy. A soft cry in the near distance. Andy and Barney limply turned their heads to see Aunt Bee standing in the office doorway, mouth agape, cobbler in hand. Her other hand was beneath her cooking apron, sticky with sugar and her own peachy cream. She finally knew the pleasures of small town living. Thank you.
Lillian Devane with a strong opening volley. Keep it going for Shane Torres.
Hey. Thanks for having me, Brian. Yeah, this show is like This American Life for sexual deviants. Secondly, I would like all of you to know I am not a monster. Let's do it. It was the evening of the Republicans' final primary debate in 2016, or as the rest of the U.S. has started calling it, the perfect storm. The three remaining candidates stood on stage, each one more evil than the last. As they all stood on stage next to one another in the auditorium of that conservative university in Orlando, the stench of pure evil was wafting through the air. The candidates shook hands and walked off stage together, presumably to go bash a baby's head against a rock and suck the marrow out of the remaining skull bones. Donald, Jeb, and Ben had all decided they would have a gentleman's dinner after the debate. They went to a restaurant that normally would have not allowed Ben Carson in. But they made an exception because of his moral bankruptcy. They all had something from the endangered species menu. As they dined on a meal that was more than the annual income of most people in this room, they found as the evening progressed, they liked each other. I mean, they really liked each other. Ben enjoyed the directness of Donald's conversation. Donald thought Jeb's stammer was cute in a dumb, stupid fuck kind of way. And Jeb was sure he would have loved the color of Ben's eyes if he ever fucking opened them. The check came and they agreed they would all expense it to the taxpayers. As they began to part ways, there was a bit of lingering outside the restaurant. No one wanted the evening to end. After all, they'd been through a lot together. Vanquishing the other candidates, Rubio, Santorum, Jabba the Christie. The hugs were just a little too long, the handshakes a little too soft, and the goodbyes a bit too faint to not feel something. In a last-ditch effort, Jeb said, "If you fellas don't have to leave too early in the morning, why don't we go get breakfast?" Ben replied, "Or we can go have Boston pancakes right now." Donald asked, "What's that?" Ben replied, "That is when I take a shit on your chest and slap it with my nutsack till it's flat. My jizz is the syrup." Jeb and Donald nodded in rich white agreement. They piled into their limos and rushed into Donald's hotel room. They got into his room and the security was told to leave. As they did, Jeb began to loosen his necktie in a way that can only be described as homeschoolish. Ben followed suit. They shoved the billionaire onto the bed, still fully clothed and wearing his favorite American flag pendant on his collar. They bound his arm to the bed frames with their nearly identical red ties. They stripped his... Ugh. It's like I spend all day doing this, and it's just fucking gross. They stripped his $1,000 slacks off and pulled down his tidy whities to reveal a near-exact pubic replica of Donald's haircut. Wild red hair strewn about revealing Donald's micropenis. I just got a text. Donald shouted, "It's called a micropenis, and it's a medical condition." The two trailing candidates smiled at each other. "Long as it works," Jeb replied. Ben stood up on the bed and began to hover above Donald's chest. Dropping his pants, he squatted and got ready to evacuate himself like an orphanage on fire. Jeb, now completely nude, sat there playing with his nipples and massaging Donald's nub, thinking about how this reminded of him of his fraternity days. Ben Carson opened up his south mouth and fired out a log that landed on Donald's chest like a phone book. The turd landed squarely on Trump's American flag pin, not realizing the irony they'd be shitting on this thing for the last 18 months. By now, the world's most exclusive fuck party had started to look more like a G.G. Allen show. If that reference doesn't work in Brooklyn. Ben writhed on top of Trump's face while Jeb rode his itty-bitty dick down to a used pencil eraser. forcing a pleasure on the men he had never felt before and could not buy with all his billions. The sheets were covered in every single fluid or solid that could come out of a human being, even vomit. I don't know why I put that. There was no way that he was getting his deposit back on this hotel room. And they were probably going to have to paint it just to get the smell out. Donald had a harder time swallowing what Ben and Jeb released than his final divorce settlement. Finally, after the men were drained, they collapsed onto each other in a reverse Oreo fashion. They woke up the next morning and Donald had ordered room service for his two little pleasure puppets. Jeb settled down to the table first and Ben shortly after. They were nibbling on Eggs Benedict. "Donald, why are you not eating?" Carson inquired. "I usually wait and have a heavy lunch," replied Trump. He drank coffee. Suddenly, Jeb began coughing violently, and Ben started to pat him on the back. "It's just some fuck juice from last night. You're all right." Then Carson began coughing as well, and a smile crept over Trump's face. Jeb keeled over and stopped coughing, laying there getting colder and deader. Ben Carson gasped for air and looked at the breakfast. It was poisoned! Carson realized there was nothing he could do. He leapt towards Trump in a final attempt, but he was already too weak, careening into the breakfast table. Trump stepped over him. "There's no one to stop me now that you two are out of the picture. The public has to pick me now." Carson's eyes lost their life, and Trump stepped over him again to look out the window as Ben drew his final breaths. Trump bellowed, "There's no one to stop me now!" Suddenly, the door burst open, and in the door jam stood Democratic primary runner and presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders. Trump's mouth opened wider than it did the night before. "Sandman's here, motherfucker!" Sanders yelled. They charged at one another like an anime film. Sanders leapt into the air, drop-kicking Trump in the chest, sending him through the window of the penthouse of his own hotel. As he fell to the earth, Trump screamed, "Sanders!" That's what I call a political revolution. Vote Sanders, 2016. Thanks, guys.
Shane Torres. Is that Lisa Curry? Oh, keep it going for Lisa Curry.
Hey guys. Oh God. Oh no, my email isn't loading. What do I do now? Oh, here it is. Hi you guys. Sorry, I'm like running late. I didn't have time to write something, but my uncle like worked on the Jonestown Massacre case, so he like forwarded me this thing and I thought it was kind of more important. So I'm just gonna read this. It's actually Jim Jones' suicide note. Jim Jones, of course, the holy leader of the People's Temple. "And so this is the end. To whoever finds this letter, you must know that I began as a good man. I had only the purest and most righteous intentions from the start, but my path got twisted as I went along, due partly to my own blind faith in my followers. More so even than that, it was due to the evils and corruption that seeped into my community from the United States government. At the end of our time in San Francisco, things really began to fall apart. Here and there, people began to doubt my teachings, and I'm sorry to say that on several occasions, I had to resort to violence in order to keep people in line. It being crucial that I establish dominance, I often lowered myself to acts of homosexuality. It simply wasn't enough for me to fuck a woman to show who was in charge. Any true leader will tell you the same as I am now, that you must fuck the men as well. To preserve my piousness, I insisted that all men who wished to receive me anally first take an enema. It was a minuscule but significant procedure to ask of someone before taking me to his anus, an offering of my body which Jesus Christ himself had never given to his people. Do not get some sick idea that I involved myself in a form of the devil's orgy. While I may have entered several men in a single day, there was never a witness to these acts outside of a wife, and only then to bond them together in the in their servitude like a warm cocoon woven of faith. You must remember that some people see a great deal of God in my body. They see Christ in me, a hope of glory. And because of that, it is my duty to insert myself into their body just the same as I inserted myself into their hearts and minds. deep down, all men are homosexual, except for me. I can see now how that may have led to a certain amount of shame for the men who took me into their ass. That shame, left unchecked, must have been what led to my first defectors. As more people began to break away, I knew it was time to leave. When we first arrived in Guyana, it was unlike anything I had ever experienced. We built the most perfect utopia man could ever dream of, and it all belonged to me. Both women and men gave themselves to me freely and without question. Night after glorious night, I took the congregants into my room and forgave them of their sins by furiously pummeling them from behind with my throbbing celestial shaft. Gender was of no consequence to me, as I saw and continue to see my actions not as sexual acts, but as gifts of the Holy Spirit in its purest form. Most nights unfolded in such a rote manner that they blurred together in my mind as one extraordinary festival of giving. It would always start the same. A member of my congregation would come to me humbly, embarrassed by his own sins and asking for forgiveness. I would so generously take him into my compound where he would disrobe and prepare for the evening's affair. I would first examine his body, pointing out flaws so as to humiliate him and keep him from believing he was any more than a common man. Only once he was completely broken down would I proceed. Looking at the man splayed out on the bed before me, I would feel a sense of duty as I unzipped my pants and pulled them only partially down. "This is our cause," I'd whisper, pulling his hands up to place them on his own buttocks, never forcing, only suggesting that he give himself fully to me. I'd first examine the anus with two and then three fingers to make sure he had properly prepared. By then, my cock would be pulsating and starting to drip in anticipation of relieving the man of his stress of his sins. I'd enter slowly at first, watching closely as the head, then shaft of my penis disappeared into his rectum. I'd vigorously thrust myself into and out of him again and again, reminding him of my teachings. "You're gonna help yourself or you'll get no help," I'd scream. "There's only one hope of glory and that's within you." "What about the word of the Lord?" they'd inevitably plead, not realizing how absurd they sounded, inquiring about an invisible man while their true leader rammed his own divine cock into their ass. "I'll say now, as I've always before," I'd seethe, "nobody's gonna come out of the sky. There's no heaven up there. We'll have to make heaven down here. Now tell me you believe in me. Let me hear you say Jim Jones is your one true God and you believe in me fully." On command, they'd yelp in pleasure and surrender. "You, Jim Jones, are my one true God and I take you into me. Absolve me of sin so that I can be forgiven." As many times as I said the same thing to one faceless fuckhole after another, it never got old hearing a true believer scream my name as their savior. Time and again, I'd have to stifle the creeping pleasure bubbling up within myself as I came with the forcefulness of a tsunami, destroying the sinner's insides with a gush of my hot, succulent Holy Spirit. After each session of carnal forgiveness, I'd swear my disciple to secrecy before dismissing them from the property, knowing they'd never again be as pure as the moment I finished inside of them. As I sit here now in my final moments, looking across the hundreds of bodies of true believers strewn about the property, knowing in my heart of hearts that I've saved them from a fate worse than death, I can't help getting sentimental and reflecting on how I went about saving the lot of them. I feel my cock begin to swell with pride. For anyone judging how the congregants of the People's Temple lived and passed into the next realm, I ask you this. If we're not living to get off, then why are we even living? Thank you.
Lisa Curry. And your final round one competitor, Julia Rossi.
Do you guys know the show Three's Company? Okay, I knew they would. Who doesn't? Learn it. It's like the best television ever. Okay, so if you don't know the show, Jack Tripper pretends to be gay so he can live with Chrissy and Janet, and their landlords are Helen and Stanley Roper, and Stanley never fucks his wife. That's the premise. Okay. As usual, Helen indicated to Stanley that she was in the mood. And as usual, Stanley responded with, "I have a headache joke," and then mugged the camera in typical Stanley fashion. Helen had enough, or rather, none at all. She was so sick of her husband not appreciating the temple beneath her muumuu. "Fine, Stanley, I'm going for a walk," Helen boasted, grabbed her purse, and walked out the door. She went around to the garage of their apartment building with her vibrator. "If Stanley doesn't want me, then I'll want myself." And then slipped the buzzing cock-shaped instrument up her caftan. Just as she felt herself quiver, she heard laughing. It was Jack, Janet, and Chrissy in their apartment sipping beers and playing cards. So after Helen came, she knocked on their door. "Hello, Mrs. Roper," said Janet as she answered. "Were we being too loud?" "No. Was I?" Helen asked. Janet responded with a puzzled look. "I felt lonely and it sounded like you kids were having fun in here, so I decided to stop by. Is that okay?" "Of course, Mrs. Roper," said Jack. "Please, sit down." Chrissy handed Helen a beer. Helen took the cold, hard bottle from Chrissy's soft hand and put it to her lips and slowly sipped, tonguing the beer opening with a careful sensuality. As the four of them played Go Fish, Helen's desire grew, her gaze jumping from Chrissy to Jack to Janet to Jack to Chrissy to Janet, thinking about what she'd do to each, where she'd touch each of them, where each of them would touch her. "Kids, I was wondering, would you be interested in playing a different game?" Helen asked. "Sure, Mrs. Roper. What do you have in mind?" asked Jack. "Fucking," said Helen. "Is that a German game?" asked Chrissy. "Oh, Chrissy." "No," said Helen, "I want to fuck all of you. Or rather, I want you to fuck me. Look, I've been married to Stanley for too long, and I haven't had sex in over 5 years. You're all so beautiful and young and sexy. I mean, you've all had sex with each other, haven't you?" "No, Mrs. Roper, we're just roommates. Although I have thought about it," said Janet. "Me too," said Jack. "Me too," said Chrissy. "Although I don't think much." Chrissy. And then with that, Jack began kissing Janet and Chrissy began kissing Helen, and then they switched and switched again. Their hands were grabbing and touching and rubbing. "And I think we should take care of Helen the most," said Janet. "After all, she is the one who needs it." Then Janet grabbed Helen's robust red curly hair, tugged it back, and said, "You need it, right, Helen?" "Yes, I need it. I need it so bad," Helen cried. Then they laid Helen on the sofa. Janet and Chrissy each took off their clothes and then took turns licking Helen's wet pussy as Jack stood over Helen's face, slapping his hard cock in her mouth. Then Jack moved Chrissy and Janet out of the way and rammed his dick into Helen's pussy while Janet and Chrissy scissored beside them. Chrissy grinded against Janet with a powerful strength from all of her years of using a Thighmaster. Then Helen moaned in ecstasy, and Jack thrusted and thrusted into her as Helen screamed, "I never believed you were gay, Jack!" And then Jack came all over her breasts. And then there was a knock at the door. Chrissy looked through the peephole. It was Larry. "Should I let him in?" Chrissy asked. "I want him in," Helen said. Larry entered and immediately took off his clothes and showed off his huge rock-hard cock as if he knew the script. Larry then threw Helen over the sofa and rammed her from behind while Chrissy sucked Jack's dick and Janet sucked Chrissy's clit. Larry fucked Helen so hard the sofa was moving so much that Stanley downstairs began to feel pieces of the ceiling fall on his head. Stanley ran upstairs, banged on the door and yelled, "What the hell is going on here?" And Janet whispered, "What should we do?" And Helen said, "Stanley." So Janet opened the door, dragged Stanley in. "What the hell is this?" asked Stanley. "Your new life," had said Helen. Cute cut to the life poster on the wall with the butterfly. Cut back to the scene. Thank you. Jack and Larry grabbed Stanley and tied him to the bed in Jack's room. Chrissy and Janet then began teasing Stanley's cock as Helen demanded, "You need to fuck me, Stanley." "Okay, okay," cried Stanley, "but you're teasing me. You're all making it so hard." "It's not fun to be teased and not fucked, is it, Stanley?" Helen said, as Chrissy and Janet brushed their pussies and tits all over Stanley's arms and legs, getting his dick bigger, redder, harder. "It's not. Please, please, please just make me come. I need to come," screamed Stanley. "Me too," said Helen, "for the past 5 years." Then Helen sat on Stanley's dick and rode him while Larry fucked Chrissy and Jack fucked Janet. And then they all came at the same time. Wow. The kisses really are hers and hers and his, said Stanley. And the cocks and pussies too, said Jack. And then they all laughed. And then they all went to the Regal Beagle for happy hour.
Julia Rossi. Julia, you can stay right here. Let's get everybody from round one back to the stage. Mr. Roper was Don Knotts, right?
No.
No? Was Don Knotts? Was...
No. We were the same dude. No.
But Don Knotts was in Three's Company, right?
Stanley was not Don Knotts.
But who was Don Knotts?
Norman Bell.
Thank you. Jesus.
He was
later. That's right. All right. Anyway, I'm going to still call that two Don Knotts references in one round, which is probably not enough. Oh, it's the zeitgeist. But people want to hear about Don Knotts getting fucked. That's just the way the world is now. All right. You guys are going to vote with your applause on a winner. First, I'm just going to remind you of what everybody wrote. We started with Lillian Devane with Andy Griffith, then Shane Torres. Hold on. You've done this show so many times. You know how it works. Shane Torres with the Republican primary, Lisa Curry with the Jonestown Massacre, and Julia Rossi with Three's Company. So pick a favorite with your applause, starting with Lillian Devane, Andy Griffith. Shane Torres, Republican primary.
Shout out to Lemmy Kilmister, he died tonight.
Okay, Lemmy?
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, he just died.
Oh, well, way to bum out this whole crowd. Lisa Curry with the Jonestown Massacre. And Julia Rossi, Three's Company. I think that's Lillian Devane with Andy Griffith. Your round one champion. Thank you all so much. Big round of applause for all of your round one competitors. For Lenny, for Don Knotts.
That does it for round one. To hear round two, you can download episode 173 next week. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. And for details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.